we look ahead to 2022. Tax cuts, school curriculum, plus elections and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending December 31st, 2021.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller, a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, we look ahead to the 2022 legislative session, in which tax cuts will likely be at the forefront of debate. Through the first 5 months of the current fiscal year, Indiana has collected $647 million more than the state budget needs. And that's on the heels of the last fiscal year, when the state generated budget reserves of nearly $4 billion, triggering an automatic taxpayer refund. Those lofty revenues have lawmakers contemplating permanent tax cuts. Some leaders have expressed hesitance to do so in 2022. They point out that a huge influx of federal funds over the last year or so make it harder to predict when state tax revenues will settle back to normal. A new revenue forecast released this month has helped shed a little light on that question. How will the tax cut debate play out in the 2022 session? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney. Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanners, host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly, State House reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Mike O'Brien, especially after a new revenue forecast, says Indiana's going to bring in $3.3 billion more dollars in the current budget cycle. Can Senate Republicans say no to a big tax cut in an election year?
I think a couple things. One, it's not being motivated by the election year. It's being motivated by this newfound, this money that we didn't and never anticipated having available to us. So ones from the last, from revenue forecast back in April, consistently month, as you just said, month in and month out, beating the revenues, even from that rosy forecast back in the spring. So what's motivating it is this money that's available and what to do with. I do think, and over time has been correct in that having a surplus that's kind of obscenely large maybe does become a political liability. But where we'll disagree again, that's the end of me agreeing fan, or we'll disagree again. What you actually do with it. And I think with the emphasis for State House Republicans has been, okay, well, what's the right number to have kind of sitting there to weather and be able to cash flow what we saw 18 months ago, which was maybe an anticipated, remember, it's not been that long ago, we thought the state budget was going to completely crater under COVID and a slowdown in the economy. And now we have the opposite problem. So I think the question is, what for State House Republicans, is what's the right number to responsibly hold back in reserve? What do you maybe refund to taxpayers, and what do you do with any excess? And that's the debate. And the disagreement between the House and Senate, again, is, Republicans has been a matter of timing and sustain and an understanding of what revenue is sustainable.
Ann Delaney, in terms of the electoral impact on this debate, not just on this issue, but maybe on a few, we've started to get a sense, I think some folks at the State House have started to get a sense, that House Republicans are worried about primaries, Senate Republicans not so much. Will that be a major factor in how this and other debates play out?
Of course it will. I mean, Mike is putting the best spin on this he can. But the fact of the matter is that the Republican primaries are what drives this. It's what drives the anti-vaxxing and the trying to curtail employers' rights to make safe workplaces. All of that is determined by the Republican primaries. So, yes, it will have an impact. Now, the Senate has taken gerrymandering to a new art form. And between what they've done to suppress the vote and the turnout that they have in Indiana, the risk isn't very great to the Senate. In the House, though, especially in the areas around Marion County where their Democrats are moving in and exerting a lot more influence, there are a few seats that could be up for grabs here, and that's what's really motivating it. They don't need the number of votes they have in order to be in the majority. They're going to continue to be in the majority in both houses. I frankly think the Republican Party would be better off if we had an actual two-party system that wasn't gerrymandered to benefit them as well as it has been.
Nikki Kelly, you and I have talked about this offline, if you will, but you've pointed out that with the kind of numbers we're now seeing in terms of projected budget reserves, you could cut the personal income tax by a couple tenths of a percent down to 3%, and the business personal property tax, which are both things that House Republicans have talked about, and still have a lot of money left over, right?
It's true. Those two together would cost the state about $470 million annually. So you could have a cut for both business and individuals and still have money left over to be talking about. So, I do think the Senate Republicans, in their more cautious approach, they're trying to figure out if this new revenue will A, actually realize, and then B, is this an ongoing thing or is this a temporary blip? Because the last thing we want to do is, for instance, we put all that money into education last year. We've seen teacher raises. So what happens if after 2 years, the revenue dips and then what, we don't keep the raises? So, you need to be careful when you're cutting to make sure you can continue the investments you've already made, much less make additional investments.
That goes.
The other thing too is when Mike Pence cut the income tax a few years ago, you remember, it was a big hoopla about that. Nobody, no individual taxpayer felt it, but it had has a $500 million hit on the state, on the biennial budget. $500 million gone, and no individual taxpayers felt it. Just like this $125 may mean something to somebody who's making, minimum wage, but it isn't going to make a big difference in lifestyle or anything else to the vast majority of Hoosiers. And yet it really takes money that could be put into the future away from that opportunity.
John Schwann, it's back to it's the question of timing here, as Mike O'Brien pointed out. Do you cut taxes in 2022 or 2023 when you write a new state budget? Senate Republicans are, that doesn't seem to be on the table, at least for Republicans at this point. So if you're Senate Republicans and you're trying to preach caution to what Nikki Kelly just talked about, which are these kind of astronomical budget reserves and revenue increases sustainable, is that a message you can sell to Hoosiers?
I suppose the cautionary note is something that might be sellable because Hoosiers tend to be good stewards of their resources. Traditionally, historically, that's the reputation. They like people who are employ common sense measures. And I think people who are concerned about a big tax cut or any kind of tax cut now that's permanent can point out, A, that things can change quite a bit, as we've seen. But also, they can point to those many Republicans in the past session and even now who say, well, we don't want to invest in a lot of big programs. And Nikki alluded to this, for instance, with teacher salary increases. But we don't want to put a lot of money into a program and then find out it's not sustainable, because then what do? We go back and tell people they can't have their money. We got to claw it back. But the same argument could be made for a permanent tax increase. If you grant a permanent tax increase now and things dip, and we've already sort of stipulated that there's not a great appetite in the current General Assembly for raising taxes, basically it becomes a permanent measure that the state will have to live with, whether the fortunes are good or whether things sour. So I think those who are concerned about rash movement could point out that just as it might not be wise to invest heavily in programs that aren't sustainable, it might not be entirely prudent to grant a tax cut permanently that could turn out to be an unfortunate move in the next biennium.
All right. Well, Indiana lawmakers took testimony twice before the session even started on a bill that would effectively ban private companies from enforcing COVID-19 vaccine mandates. The politics at play behind the measure, though, can be a bit tricky. The people advocating loudest against vaccine mandates and who are generally in favor of the bill traditionally support Republicans, but the state's business community also usually backs the GOP, and top businesses are lining up against the legislation. Political scientist Andrew Downs says there's been a push and pull between those two sides for a while.
the Republican Party historically has been the pro-business party, and they certainly still fall into that category in terms of tax policy and regulation and those sorts of things. But over the last several years, they have begun to focus quite a bit on individuals and individualism.
Downs says a major factor at play here is that with uncompetitive general election races, Republican lawmakers have to worry most about primaries and so must appease particularly conservative voters.
Those of us who are sort of on the inside, we've heard stories about some of the more conservative members of the Republican caucus actually going out and recruiting candidates.
House Republicans are expected to move quickly to pass the bill once session begins in January. And Delaney, if this bill becomes law pretty much the way it sits now, is it evidence that the influence of the Indiana Chamber of Commerce is starting to wane?
I think it's evidence that the right wing of the Republican Party is in control. I've thought that for some time. And if the Indiana Chamber of Commerce wants to take a rational, intelligent, safety-conscious approach, that is not consistent with the right wing of the Republican Party. So I think that the Republican Party, frankly, is out of step with traditional Republican values and certainly with the chamber. And anybody, frankly, who thinks and is looking at this COVID crisis that we have, and we have it as a crisis, largely because the same right-wing part of the Republican Party won't get vaccinated. I mean, we've eradicated polio, we've eradicated smallpox. We could eradicate this virus if people would get vaccinated. They won't do it. It is not rational. It's not intelligent. It is not certainly part of their civic duty from their perspective. And I think they're going to be out of step with a lot more moderate Republicans going forward, because Andrew Downs is correct. The problem for Republican elected officials is the primary, because gerrymandering has been so successful and so has voter suppression been successful. So the threat is always from the right. For Congress and for the legislative races, the threat is from the right.
Mike O'Brien, I'll ask you the same question I asked Ann. Is the Indiana Chamber of Commerce's impact or influence at the State House starting to wane as we see debates like this one playing out more and more?
Well, I thought Andy Downs had a good observation on individualism. It's clearly populism has a much stronger streak and following in the Republican Party than maybe the Chamber of Commerce or Chambers of Commerce nationwide are used to. What Ann describes is pulling it to the right in these primaries, that is certainly a dynamic here. It's a dynamic in Indiana because Indiana's a right-leaning state and has become more and more right-leaning in the last in the last decade. It's really no different in left-leaning states where you wonder where the Blue Dog Democrats went. Well, the answer is they lost in the primary because they weren't far left enough, or they lost in the general election and then those states redrew those maps and now they're safely Democratic. I mean, these are, you don't have to go, you know, you can drive 70 miles to the west and see a gerrymandered Illinois and
gerrymandering is in Indiana.
I think you're free to file a lawsuit in that regard, Ann, which no one has done.
The Supreme Court said they don't recognize.
So anyway, back to the question about the chamber. I'm not going to comment on the chamber necessarily, other than they are representing it's not like the chamber is deferring away from the right part of the Republican Party, and now they agree with the Democrats. The Democrats want the employer mandate. The chamber's saying we don't want any of it. Like, let these guys make up their own mind. And that is in step with as we saw the Ball State poll last week, with 40% of Hoosiers who agreed with that position, when you had 28% who wanted them out, wanted the government out of this altogether. So I think the House Republicans in this regard are trying to thread a needle between individual and employer rights.
John Schwanes, I think maybe another thing that's possibly at play here too, though, as lawmakers make these decisions, is in the political realm, traditionally it's the business community that ponies up a lot more money when it comes to fundraising. Will lawmakers take that sort of thing into account, or just count on the business community and chambers of commerce backing them no matter what happens with this individual bill?
Well, they would ignore the money and the implications at their own peril. Like it or not, money is a huge driver in our process, becoming more so all the time. You know, we're seeing now legislative races that used to be bankrolled with, you could have crack open your kid's piggy bank and probably pay for your campaign. Now, you know, it just doesn't work that way. Now you're seeing the kinds of price tags associated with non-statewide races that would have been unheard of 20 years ago, even 10 years ago. So money talks, money is a driver. And I think that is an accurate assessment, Brandon, that you make in terms of the chamber and the business community it represents. These are large employers. They are people who have the wherewithal to become engaged politically, not just through, you know, emails and texts and sort of the vitriol that we see so often or in the volume, but actually can speak quietly but effectively, it seems to me, by supporting candidates financially as they seek election. So I don't think that's going to go away.
Nikki Kelly, though, the business community doesn't like it. They want the government to leave them alone. And yet the people crying loudest for a bill like this don't like this particular bill because they want a 100%, you cannot have any sort of mandate whatsoever, and this bill doesn't go that far. Are House Republicans at this point, because we don't know whether Senate Republicans will support this, but are House Republicans setting themselves up to fail with this particular bill?
I mean, with a certain subsegment, they are. I mean, one of the people who testified at that the latest hearing, I thought, had a great point. He said Republicans act like they have a two-party system within their own party. And that's what we're seeing play out right now. And so, you know, you have to wonder if they pass. Yeah. So you have to wonder if they pass sort of a compromise bill, even though it actually improves the situation from a conservative standpoint on vaccine mandates. You know, it doesn't end it all together. And is that enough for them to be mad enough to go want a primary someone?
Yeah. All right. Indiana is preparing, like many states, to debate school curriculum in the upcoming session amid a national debate about what schools should be teaching when it comes to race, equality, diversity, equity, and inclusion. Tied up in that debate is social-emotional learning. Educators and experts agree it plays an essential role in preparing students for life after high school. And Indiana includes some SEL competencies in the state's employability skills standards, like things like how to work in a team and manage one's own emotions. Indiana Attorney General Todd Rokita's latest update to his Parents' Bill of Rights document suggests in part that SEL is being misused in schools. It suggests parents should push state lawmakers to change that if they believe those standards are being used to teach critical race theory. Derek Marshall is the director of Indiana's Southeastern Career Center. He says that's not what they do, and career technical educators were using SEL strategies before the state made the employability standards.
CTE classes are educators of the whole child. We teach them interviewing skills. We teach them job coping skills. We teach them how to be accountable for their own actions, show up on it. So it was seamless for us.
He and other CTE educators also say employers notice when students have social and emotional skills to cope in the workplace and when they don't. Nikki Kelly, when it comes to this school curriculum debate, how exacting and specific do you think lawmakers are going to be?
Well, I think it's clear they're not going to ban CRT because trying to define it is near impossible. So they're not going to sort of go that route. They're definitely looking at curriculum transparency, you know, and whether that means, you know, does the teacher have to post their syllabus every day, every classroom instruction, like every book they read, every worksheet they use, you know, I think that's where we're going. And then also the idea that we would have parent involvement on local committees when they're talking about curriculum or books in the library, that kind of thing. I think we'll see some of that.
John Schwanis, in terms of that idea of transparency, it seems some of that might fall on teachers to do more. We already have a teacher shortage. We're likely to continue to have a teacher shortage as we're having trouble attracting people to the profession. Does that make it harder?
I think so. I mean, it's a good thing teachers received a pot of money in the last in the current budget and that many districts are passing that on to teachers because it would take all the money in the world, I think, to perhaps deal with some of the headaches that this issue, that this legislation might introduce, if in fact there's an onus placed on teachers to, as you suggested, post things daily. And it's not just a one-way transaction. I presume that would be posting it daily and then fielding all the inquiries and complaints or suggestions. I mean, it doesn't sound like, you know, what probably a lot of teachers, what motivated them to get into the business in the first place. And where do you draw the line? I mean, and I'm being only somewhat flippant here, but coaching, you know, we got a lot of kids involved in extracurriculars, and sometimes we parents wonder what those coaches were thinking with their starting lineups and their substitution patterns. I think transparency could be good there too, because that affects children and their well-being. Because a lot of times I felt the need to weigh in on coaches' decisions, and now I might be obliged to do so.
Mike O'Brien, we talked in the last topic about voter and citizen anger driving some of these things, and we're certainly seeing that on this issue about school curriculum and race and all of that in the classroom. Would the measures that Nikki's talking about, just more transparency, is that going to appease that voter anger?
I don't know. The risk you run is what John just described, which is you put a pile of new requirements on teachers to maintain a website and what they're doing every day and what they're saying to the kid every day and what they're handing out every day, what chapter of the book they're in. You know, these are all, of course, things that, you know, traditionally conservative parents believe that the parents ought to be, you know, engaged in it at home anyway. You know, one of the most fun classes for my high school son that I've enjoyed in his first semester in high school has been kind of the social emotional side, which isn't extreme. It's like soft skill development. I thought it's been, you know, whether it's practicing a job interview with them or something else. I mean, it seems interesting to me that some of the things that the schools have been required to go teach because the students were lacking them were what traditional conservatives would already argue about, which is what they weren't learning at home. And they decry that. Well, the schools had to go fill in the blanks on some of this stuff and go teach kids things that traditionally in past generations, maybe they were learning in other places, whether it was from their family or their, you know, just through life experience that they were getting somewhere else. So it's gotten extremely, obviously these school board, you know, you see them all over the country. This isn't an Indiana thing. And I think it's an outgrowth of and a redirection of angst and anger that has been around now for, you know, for a long time.
And Delaney, we've seen in other states, state governments go as far as banning words and phrases from the classroom. You had teachers in Texas worried about teaching about the Holocaust because they might have to teach about the opposing view on the Holocaust, which I suppose would be the Nazis. Are we unlikely to see anything quite that severe here in Indiana?
I don't know. You asked whether the anger would be appeased. The answer is no, because Todd Rokita is deliberately stirring it up. I mean, he started with that critical race theory, which wasn't being taught in K-12, okay? And then he goes on with this now. There's been so much out there about critical race theory not being taught. Now he's found another bullseye for him to stir up the anger. And this is being done by the Republicans all around the country. I mean, we could go back to when you talk about the Holocaust and the Nazis, we could go back to burning books under this theory. You know, the fact of the matter is we had slavery in this country. The fact of the matter is we have racism in this country, and ignoring that and not talking about it gives a misinformed view of the history of this country to students. So, you know, transparency sounds good, but we're having enough trouble attracting teachers and paying teachers. And putting this other burden on top of them, it seems to me, you know, maybe some of these legislators ought to try going into the classroom and just see how hard it is to teach. And maybe they'd get out of the classroom, which they need to be.
Nikki Kelly, before I move on from this topic, I want to circle back to you and ask the same thing we've just talked about the last two topics, the role that concerns about primary elections are playing in debates at the State House in 2022. Will that be a factor here, particularly as we've seen sort of a difference about those fears between the House and the Senate?
Yeah, I'm sure it is. Although the ones who would primary a person, I mean, you know, you got to think about how they would put that in a piece of legislation. It's one thing to just say I'm against something. It's another thing to write it in a way that you can actually make it work in governance.
Yeah, you talked about the idea of that definition and hard to get to it. Well, finally, it's that time.
You'd be like insanity.
Yeah, it's that time of year when people make New Year's resolutions. So, Mike O'Brien, what should Indiana's New Year's resolution be?
watch Anne's head spit off, so she likes to put me on a corner on this issue. But I've long had this idea that the cure to toxic partisanship in Indiana and the country is more partisanship. And so how about on these new maps, everyone goes and votes in the primary?
Ooh, I like that one. Anne Delaney, very quickly, New Year's resolution
That's
for
good.
Indiana.
I like that. To invest in the future, build back better.
All right. Well, that is Indiana Week in Review for this week and really this year. Our panel is Democrat Anne Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Stay safe, stay healthy, please get vaccinated if you can, and have a happy new year. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com. The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.